Imagine you're married, you have a daughter, and when your spouse gets a job in another state, you plan for that move. But you also have to plan for the fact that your new state does not recognize your same-sex marriage. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Sarah Vereen is my guest this hour, a writer from Iowa in a same-sex marriage. She's now living in Lubbock, Texas, where same-sex marriages are illegal. She's author of a recent online article which caught our attention, How to Unmarry Your Wife, found on themorningnews.org. Sarah Vereen joins us from KTTZ in Lubbock, Texas. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the show today. I'd like to have you start off by please reading the first paragraph of the article I just mentioned, How to Unmarry Your Wife.
Okay, sounds good. It was sweltering the day I unmarried Marta, and we weren't even together. I was with my little brother in a Penske truck, the flat haze of West Texas rising before us like the credits at the end of a movie. Marta was with our 3-month-old daughter back in Iowa, where the weather was temperate. Highs were in the 70s, lows in the 50s, and Marta was still married to me. Don McLean was coming in concert that weekend, and there were drink specials at our favorite vegan restaurant. Our daughter cried for milk and slept and cried some more. A couple of days later, the two of them flew out to West Texas to join me in our new home next to a university where Marta and I both had jobs, and we were no longer married to each other.
Sarah Vereen, that starts a short essay about this. Very interesting. Tell us, how did you and your wife, Marta, come to move to Lubbock, Texas from Iowa City?
Well, we were both grad students in Iowa City, but Marta is Spanish. She's a Spaniard. And so when she was finishing her PhD, this was before DOMA was overthrown. So this was at a time when we had gotten married in Iowa. We were legally married in Iowa, but we were not a legally married couple federally. And so it meant for Marta to be able to stay in the country, she needed to find a job so she could stay here. So she went on the job market, and she found the job in Texas was the best job for the two of us. There's a program here, a doctorate program in creative writing that I'm doing. So it's a good move for me professionally. And it was a good move for her as well. But what it meant is that we had to then make a decision to move to a state where we would essentially become unmarried. Mm. And I think something I said in the essay is that, you know, we made a decision to keep our family together. And by doing that, we moved to a state in which we are no longer legally a family.
Mm-hmm. So unmarry is not an actual legal term, but you mean that, what do you mean? I guess is the question.
Yeah. I mean, I think unmarry is something I only started to think about once I moved here. You know, the laws now in the United States regarding same-sex couples are really complicated, especially with the overthrow of DOMA, of that being brought down now. If you're married in one state, you're also legally married federally, but you're only married within that state you're married in. And so what I felt when I moved here was that I had gotten unmarried. And I felt that in both a legal sense, in that I could no longer, I couldn't get insurance with Marta as a member of her family through the university, but also that I mentioned in the essay at some point that, you know, we signed up for a family membership at the gym, which is part of the public university, and legally we shouldn't have been able to do that. So a lot of little ways and in big ways, we were no longer married. And since you're no longer married, we're not divorced either, right? So to me, it seems like we're unmarried. That's
you're kind of in
what's happened.
In limbo a little bit, it seems like.
So.
Did that play into your decision a lot? I mean, you told me the story of why you moved to Lubbock, but did you think this would be a big deal going down there? Did you weigh against perhaps going to Lubbock, Texas, because you wouldn't be recognized as a married couple there?
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, Marta had a number of job offers, and each of them we had to weigh the things that couples normally have to weigh, you know, how will it be for both members of the couple, and what do you think of the place, and, you know, will your kids be okay there? But we also had to think about the legal status, and so she had another job offer in another state that doesn't where same-sex marriages are not legal. But in that state, there were no opportunities for me. So it was the idea that I would go there and it would be hard for me to even find health insurance. This was also before Obamacare. So it would be difficult to find health insurance on my own. And so we had to think of all these sort of these little items as well as the big items. And at the end, Lubbock seemed like the best for both of us, but we both knew it would be difficult.
Mm-hmm. So go ahead. Yeah.
No, we knew it would be difficult, but I think knowing something is different than experiencing it.
Right.
You
were undoubtedly filled with visions of what might happen, conversations that might happen, how you would be accepted or not accepted there. So you land in Lubbock, Texas when? When did you
About
move?
A year ago, actually. Mm-hmm. A year ago.
So you arrived there with some trepidation, I assume. And what actually happened? Did it fulfill your expectations? Was it easier, harder than you thought?
I think it was a little of both. I had lived in Texas before. I had lived in East Texas, not West Texas. I think people that are not Texans have stereotypes about Texas being this super conservative place, which it is and it isn't. People here are in some ways a little like Iowans. You know, Iowans are very into that sort of live and let live. But Texas also has a lot of very conservative people ruling the state. So I think that in the day-to-day, I faced a lot less open hostility or harassment than I thought I would. What I did find and what we both found is that we were much more what I called ambassadors for, you know, same-sex couples and for GBLT people here, just because I don't know if there are fewer people here, but there might be fewer open people.
What does that mean to be an ambassador?
So I feel like I have to explain myself more often. And people are curious, you know, at our daughter's daycare, people are curious about how our family works. I think we're the only same-sex couple at our daughter's daycare. And so, you know, people will, they don't ask outright questions, but there's a sort of curiosity about, okay, you know, is there a real mom in the family?
Ask about the father, I assume? Would they ask about?
Yeah, less so, but people do, less so. But, you know, I think those sort of things happen everywhere. I think what happens here a little bit more is that, and I said this in the essay as well, but that because same-sex marriage is not legal here, there's not an awareness of those sort of families in the way there is in Iowa. I think just the fact that they are legal in Iowa, people will be more likely just to ask who's your partner rather than who is your husband or your wife. Mm-hmm. And to have sort of an awareness of the fact that we exist. And so I think it's more, I think there's still prejudice everywhere. You know, there's still people that aren't going to know exactly how our families work. And I don't mind, you know, I don't mind if people don't know something about, you know, what is our family like? Answering those sort of questions, because I think that's part of our country maturing and growing, is for couples like us to become more visible and to talk about who we are and how we function as families. And that's all really important. That's happening mm-hmm. in Texas.
Do you find yourself, after living in Lubbock for a year, that you and your wife behave differently in public, holding hands, perhaps kissing, signs of affection? Do you do less of that in public?
Yeah, definitely. And that's, you know, that's probably a little of the place and a little of what I talked about, these sort of assumptions about the place. But definitely, when we first moved here, I really noticed it. In our neighborhood, we were nervous about being affectionate, just holding hands. Whereas in Iowa, in part because we knew Iowa City so well. You know, we knew what to expect. And when we moved here, we didn't know. And you kind of place your worst fears on a place, especially when it's a place like Lubbock that is known as the second most conservative city in the U.S. Who knows mm-hmm. if that's actually true. Mm-hmm. We've become more affectionate in public, but there's still an awareness when you're on the street that something might happen. But nothing's happened. Nobody's ever said anything to us in public.
No hostility, no comments, nothing.
No, not okay. that we, I mean, I definitely have friends that have, you know, but I also have friends that have in Iowa too. So I think part of our goal, at least my goal, is to try to be more affectionate in public and try to feel comfortable. Some of that is, we call this sort of internalized homophobia, right? It's part of our society, so it's also part of me inside. And so it's sort of trying to overcome that in public spaces, you know, and feel more comfortable. But I think also one thing that happens here is that you see fewer same-sex couples in public. And so that does make it a little harder to be the only one or to feel like you're the only one.
Sarah Vereen is my guest, joining us from Lubbock, Texas. She's a writer from Iowa in a same-sex marriage. She moved with her wife to Lubbock, Texas about a year ago, Texas, where same-sex marriages are illegal. If you'd like to join our conversation, perhaps you're in a same-sex marriage where different state laws have presented a challenge to you. 1-866-780-9100. Tell us about your situation. We have a mix of state laws, as Sarah was mentioning. You mentioned in your essay, Sarah, that you drove from Iowa, where same-sex marriage is legal, through Missouri, where it's not recognized, into Texas, where it's illegal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is a spectrum we have throughout the United States now, this mix. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Just a few minutes, we'll have a person from a Lambda Legal to talk about that mix and the complications that it poses for same-sex couples. Sarah, let's have you talk a little bit about the birth of your daughter. Her name is?
I prefer not to say her name on public radio, if that's okay.
Okay.
But we can call her my daughter.
Right. Your daughter. It was. I bring her up because she was born almost coinciding with the Varnum decision in the spring of 2009, decision that declared Iowa's ban on same-sex marriage unconstitutional. Tell us about that period.
Well, so she was actually born... So she was born actually almost at the same time in which the state Supreme Court ruled that a more complicated ruling that was related to that first ruling, which was in 2009. Marta and I met actually when... when same-sex marriage was made legal in Iowa, which was in 2009. We had met before, but we sort of fell for each other at the rally in Iowa City in 2009. And our daughter was born last year in 2013, at the same time, actually within days of a decision that was made in response to that, and that related to the adoption or children born to same-sex couples, specifically lesbian couples. And so even after same-sex marriage was made legal in Iowa, there was a sort of legal loophole, I guess you could call it, where if a child was born to one member of a lesbian couple, the other member, which was me in this case, could not make that child legally hers, putting her name on the birth certificate, which a heterosexual couple can do. And the state argued that, well, that's because we know that there's no way this non-biological mother is biologically related to the child. And so that's the reasoning. But the state Supreme Court said, well, but there's no way that you can know that with a heterosexual couple. And so you're not being fair. You're basically not – you're being prejudiced in your ruling. And so within days of the birth of my daughter, the Supreme Court ruled that the state had to start allowing couples who have a baby born, lesbian couples, for them to both put their name on the birth certificate.
Mm-hmm.
But what actually happened to us in Iowa was that ruling was made, and we tried to put both of our names on the birth certificate. And even though the state Supreme Court had ruled this, the state agency said that they weren't yet ready or they didn't yet have enough information to enforce the ruling. And so we had to go through an adoption process for me to be able to legally adopt my daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what coincided with her birth.
Tell us about your wedding.
Our wedding was in Iowa City at Marta, my wife, her brother's house. Her brother also lives there. We had a very small wedding. What I said in the essay is that, you know, in some ways, Marta and I got married for the reasons that marriage used to be for, that came about for, which is to provide the legal backing that couples need to start a family. Neither one of us are these people that had dreams of big weddings, so we had a very small wedding. My parents were there. My best friend was there from Iowa. Marta's family was there. And the rest of our family our immediate family Skyped in. So they were there. Marta's family.
Very modern. Marta's, modern wedding. Yeah. Skype in. Yep.
Yeah, Marta's parents from Spain were Skyping in. They raised the champagne glasses to us via Skype. And my brother put on a tie and a nice shirt. And my dog was there. We had a good, really good friend marry us, who's ordained as a minister. It was very small, but very meaningful. We said our vows, and then we just went out and celebrated. We got together at a local bar in Iowa, and that was that. It was very simple. And I think for me, it only became increasingly meaningful the longer we were married. I sort of had, you know, some people get married because it's very important to them, the wedding. For me, it was more important to have that sort of legal backing for our family. And then only after it happened did I start to feel some of those emotional tie-ins that come with the fact that you're suddenly legal as a couple, that the state is backing your marriage.
Sarah Vereen is with us, a writer from Iowa in a same-sex marriage, now living in Lubbock, Texas, where same-sex marriages are not legal. She's the author of a recent online article, How to Unmarry Your Wife, talking about her experiences. We'll put a link we have a link on iowapublicradio.org, also on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, if you'd like to read this essay by Sarah Vereen. Also joining us, Camilla Taylor is with us, senior staff attorney and marriage project director for Lambda Legal. She was the lead counsel in the Varnum v. Breen decision in 2009 that made same-sex marriages legal in Iowa. Camilla Taylor, welcome to our program.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to this conversation. Enlighten us a little bit. Sarah talks in her essay about driving from Iowa, where same-sex marriage is legal, through Missouri, where it's not recognized, to Texas, where it's not legal. What is the range of how same-sex marriage is seen by states today in our country?
Well, the story that Sarah's retelling is something that's common to many couples in Iowa. There are only 19 states in the District of Columbia currently that allow same-sex couples to marry. And Iowa was actually only the third state in the country to permit same-sex couples to marry at the time that the Varnum decision came down. So couples who marry in Iowa and then take a road trip experience this feeling of loss, of being denied legal recognition as a family and being told by various states as they travel through that their bonds to each other don't mean as much as other families. And that's a message that the kids understand as well.
Despite the fact that DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, was struck down in 2013.
That's exactly right. And so the federal government, for most but not all purposes, will respect couples' marriages no matter where they live around the country. There are a few exceptions. The Veterans Administration, for example, contains language in the statute concerning veterans' benefits that defers to the state of residence to determine if a couple is eligible for benefits based on whether their marriage is valid. But for most federal purposes, couples like Sarah and other couples who relocate to a non-recognition state will be respected as married for federal purposes. You know, there are still a few things that are being worked out. The Family Medical Leave Act, for example, has a regulation that the federal government has announced it will change to allow same-sex couples to get family medical leave even if they live in a place like Texas. But we're living in this weird temporary time where a number of states, still a majority of states in this country, deny recognition to these couples, and hundreds of state benefits are made unavailable to them, just as Sarah describes in her essay.
If you're in a same-sex marriage and you've experienced some challenges where different state laws come into play, join our conversation with your story. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Our email, Iowa Public Radio, is also on Facebook. Also, you can find a link to Sarah Vereen's essay on Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Joining us now, I believe an Iowan who now lives in California. Is it Heal?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Heal. Welcome to our program.
Hi, Sarah, and hi Camilla. You're one of our family's heroes.
Heal, tell us, you used to live in Iowa?
We sure did. I lived there for 14 years.
Mm-hmm. And you are in a same-sex marriage?
Yeah, my wife and I married in 2007 in Canada, and then we were thrilled when Iowa recognized our marriage just a few years later.
Mm-hmm. So what has been the experience you've had moving from Iowa to California?
We actually left Iowa the day that the Supreme Court announced its decisions, both about DOMA and Windsor. And that was our 7th wedding anniversary. So we listened to Iowa Public Radio as we were leaving the state, and that was the first time that we knew for sure that our marriage would be legal in California. Our experience here has been so different because California is very welcoming of same-sex couples. Our legal status has been a little bit shaky during certain parts of California's history.
What is your legal status now?
We're married. California recognizes our marriage, so we are married both at the state and at the federal level.
Mm-hmm. During this time of changing laws and changing attitudes, what's a moment you can recall that has been the most meaningful one to you, Heal?
I think when we arrived and we had to fill out all kinds of paperwork, because I'm sure Sarah knows this too, moving means a lot of paperwork. You sign up for a lot of different kinds of insurance, and you get your driver's licenses and even your license plates. You have to write down the relationship that you have with your family members. And it's just been so nice to put wife on those forms instead of trying to squeeze domestic partner or person who leads when we dance or all of those kinds of things that are awkward and that mean different things to different people. Wife means the same thing to everybody.
That was an emotional experience to fill out a document with those four letters, wife, on a certain blank.
Of course. It's really, really nice to just be able to say that and to say it with a smile, not to say it knowing that you might be inviting some difficult questions or some skepticism. It's just, I've been out and queer for such a long time, and when I came out 100 years ago, I never assumed that we would have anything close to this level of rights. I had underestimated how important it was, both to our legal well-being, but also just to our family's emotional well-being.
Okay. Heal, thank you very much for joining us from California. Sarah Vereen will stay with us, of course, for the second half hour from Lubbock, Texas, as will Camilla Taylor of Lambda Legal to talk a little bit more about some of the strange things that are happening, stories. I'm sure Camilla has plenty of stories about how people are treated when they move through the spectrum of legal recognition for same-sex marriage. Also, coming up a little bit later, Ed Reggie will join us. Together with his husband, Scott, they organized the Marriage Equality Bus from St. Louis. It shuttles same-sex couples to Iowa City to get married. We'll hear his experience. Are you in a same-sex marriage and have different state laws presenting a challenge? Join us, 1-866-780-9100, River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We have Sarah Vereen with us, a writer from Iowa in a same-sex marriage, moved from Iowa to Texas, Iowa, where same-sex marriage is legal, to Texas, where it is not. And her experiences, some of them are recounted in her recent online essay, How to Unmarry Your Wife, found on themorningnews.org. We also have that link on our website, iowapublicradio.org, and Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page. Also with us, Camilla Taylor, senior staff attorney with Lambda Legal. She's also marriage project director in the Midwest regional office of Lambda Legal. She was lead legal counsel in the Varnum v. Breen decision that legalized same-sex marriage in Iowa. Join our conversation. Are you in a same-sex marriage where different state laws have presented a challenge or some interesting experiences you'd like to mention? 1-866-780-9100. Also, your questions about the legal evolution of same-sex marriage across the U.S. 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Ed Reggie joins us as well together. Hi, Ed.
Hi. How are you doing?
Doing fine. Ed, together with your husband, Scott Emanuel, you organize something called the Marriage Equality Bus from St. Louis, shuttles same-sex couples to Iowa City to get married. How did this start?
It started actually, my partner at the time of 10 years proposed to me and, wanted to get married. And Iowa, being that third state, was mentioned earlier in the conversation already. We felt it was close. It was similar to Missouri. It's you know, Iowa and Missouri share this heartland values, and we just wanted to take a trip. And lo and behold, once we used our social media, friends said, could we go in the back seat of your car? And then all of a sudden it became, can you rent a minivan? And then we had people following us, and we said, let's not have a bunch of cars on the highway. Let's just rent a giant charter. Let's charter a bus. And that was the very first, we had 57 people on that first bus. We brought 17 couples, family members, clergy, and we got there on May 1st, and it was in 2009. And from that day, we have not stopped. We've always had people asking to be shuttled and to be transported to get married in Iowa City.
How many to date have you kept track? How many total have taken the trip on the marriage equality bus from St. Louis to Iowa City?
To date, we have done 150 couples on the marriage bus, and that includes all their family members and children, parents with them. And then we've helped an additional about another 100 create their own buses, including several churches and other communities just kind of create their own caravans to get up there.
What's the day like? Take us through the day quickly.
Basically, it's all done in a day. So we take care of all the legal paperwork, notarization, because the paperwork does have to sit in Iowa. And we just head out on a Friday, 5 o'clock in the morning, and we head straight to Johnson County Recorder's Office, pick up our paperwork, and head over to the we particularly like using the Unitarian Universalist Society, you know, the church right there in Iowa City. And we made very clear up front we want this to be a open. We've had different clergy members, you know, use that space, and everyone gets to have, a little moment. It's not sort of this group mass wedding that takes place in a lobby. It's very individualized, and we wanted it to be that way. And then we always have a little reception. People sort of gather and have lunch in Iowa City. We do believe that's important to, you know, sort of spend money in Iowa. We do believe that's a very valid, you know, issue economically. And then we head back, you know, in the late evening. We usually head back 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. So it's a full day. You know, we're on that bus, you know, from 5 till about 10 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm. Well, tell me about a moment that stands out for you, perhaps of a couple that you've had on the bus that stands out in your memory for some reason.
Gosh, there are so many. I mean, for us, recently, I think for me, I'm just sort of getting a little bit of feeling it right now in my body. But, you know, we've had couples who've been together for over 35, 36 years. They've never thought about they'd see the day to get legal married. And we just recently had a couple, Ed and Bill, where, Bill passed away just recently in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And, of course the community has come, you know, out in support of grieving, but we know that when those situations happen, you know, people have just said to us that really made a difference in their life to actually be legally married, to be recognized by a state. I know it sounds sort of maybe odd and unusual to the listeners, but something happens when you're recognized. Families that have never spoken to each other, never, we're talking like parents and in-laws and cousins, come out of the woodwork. There's something about that recognition that changes people.
Okay, we have a tweet actually to this point from Chris, tweeted us at IPR Talk. He writes, he or she, I don't know which gender this Chris is, but Chris tweets, remove the power to define from government and the freedoms are everyone's. Do you really need the approval of bureaucrats to feel legitimate? And that's the point you're just raising, Ed Reggie.
Yeah, I could go into, and I know everyone knows the narrative of all the rights, the 1,000-plus rights that the bureaucratic, you know, that what Chris is speaking to. I mean, we could sort of sit around and say, I mean, I've heard even people say, let's do away with marriage altogether. Let's just do it away. Let's just call it something else, you know. And unfortunately, there's something unique in the creation. It's taking two individuals that are not blood related. Marriage has always been about taking two people that are not blood related and making them family, making them related legally, socially, culturally. And I don't know any other way you could do that. It's a challenge for me to think.
Let me put that question that Chris tweeted to Sarah Vereen, too. Do you really need the approval of bureaucrats to feel legitimate? How do you respond to that, Sarah?
Well, I mean, I think I mentioned in the essay that I actually am of the mind that marriage should not be a state institution. I don't think that the state should be overseeing marriage, that it should be something that's outside of the purview of the state, but it's a fact that it is. So no, I don't need the approval of bureaucrats for my marriage, but you have to acknowledge that we exist in a society in which bureaucrats are constantly sanctifying some marriages or some unions and not others, and that makes a difference in your everyday life.
Camilla Taylor, sorry, cut you off. Go ahead, Sarah.
No, just because I don't need it, but it makes a difference in your life having it.
Camilla Taylor, give us the legal perspective on that question.
Well, I guess my first perspective is more sort of a human perspective, which is that I've noticed that this question comes up in connection with the struggle of lesbian and gay couples and their children for the freedom to marry, and yet it's not often asked of different sex couples. I'm married to a man, and I really value my marriage, and I'm not sure I ever thought of seeking a marriage license as seeking the approval of my local Cleveland bureaucrat when I got married. I got married because I was in love and I wanted to be part of a family, and I knew that this was the societal way that we recognize that. And I also was concerned about the security of my husband and my children when we ultimately had children, and marriage protects families by not only making sure that families have access to the more than 1,000 federal benefits that Ed mentioned and a number of, you know, hundreds more under state law, but it's also an important way of signifying to communities that we are together permanently, and children get that as well as adults. And that was what the Windsor case acknowledged in really ringing terms when it said that when you deny marriage just to some families but not others, you brand same-sex couples and their children as worthless than other families. You demean them, you degrade them, and you humiliate children. And that's a stigma that everyone understands and that we need to eradicate.
Camilla Taylor, attitudes and the law has changed swiftly in favor of same-sex marriages in the last few years. As you mentioned, legal in 19 states in the District of Columbia currently. We've heard several narratives this hour, but you must have heard a bunch of them. Can you share a story that raises a specific legal question that may turn up in this strange mix of legal states, states that recognize where it's not legal, but and also states that ban same-sex marriage?
Well, sure. I mean, there are countless stories, countless families who've met with really tragic outcomes trying to secure their families in some way, and then moving to a non-recognition state and finding that they were not as secure as they thought they were. One of the reasons why we suggest that couples who are married in Iowa actually take the step of adopting their own children, which is insulting and expensive, and it should be completely unnecessary. Nevertheless, it is an important thing to do, and Sarah and Marta did it, and I'm glad that they did it, because an adoption decree is actually something that even a non-recognition state must respect. And yet, a marriage license is not something historically that is being given full faith and credit. So when you move to another state and say, you know, you unfortunately need to go to a hospital and seek emergency treatment for your child, if you are not the genetic parent, if your name is not on that birth certificate, and if you don't have an adoption decree, you may have a very hard time persuading medical professionals that you are a legal parent and you are authorized to authorize treatment. And, you know, there are also very tragic stories, and we're about to argue a case in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals on behalf of an Indiana couple who married in Massachusetts, and they're both 38 years old now. They have young toddlers as their children. Unfortunately, one of the members of this couple has ovarian cancer and is struggling for her life right now in a local hospital. She has to drive from her home in Indiana to Illinois to seek not just standard chemotherapy treatments and blood draws, but even emergency treatment. She found herself driving for 40 minutes for what turned out to be a pulmonary embolism because the local hospital defers to state law in determining who constitutes a family. And that is an extremely scary prospect when you are fighting a terminal illness and may need to seek emergency treatment, to think that you cannot go to your local hospital and feel comfortable that that hospital will allow your spouse and your children into the room to be with you in times of need is really terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
So these stories unfortunately come up in times when people are in grave need. They may not be easily anticipated when you will need to be respected as a family, but they're crucial, and it's ultimately about making sure that families are safe, and it's about human dignity at its heart.
Sarah Vereen, have you had those similar concerns, medical concerns, in a state where same-sex marriage is not recognized?
Yes, and that's actually, I was going to ask Camila, because I've actually been wondering about, you know, what should couples like myself do when you move to a state like this and we're no longer recognized, and we haven't filed any sort of medical forms, and Martin and I were just talking about the other day that we really should. If something happens, we are both the legal mothers of our daughter, but here we have no legal ties to each other, and so I'm
curious. So that's recognized by Texas, that you are both mothers of your daughter?
Because of that reason, because I adopted her in Iowa.
Okay.
So, but we are not legally married, and another question I had that I haven't been able to figure out is, you know, Obama recently signed an executive order saying that federal contractors, or I think people, federal contractors, that they cannot discriminate against gays and lesbians. And I'm wondering if that will be, is it possible to interpret that to universities? We're both employed by the university here. Is there a way in which, you know, we could get sort of back, you know, get rights that way?
But a university, Camila, is a state entity in most cases, right?
It depends on the university, but it would be state and not federal. That's certainly the case, unless you're talking about some sort of military academy or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I think whether that university contracts with the federal government for certain purposes would be a very specific question that's peculiar to the university. And the rules on federal contractors, you know, are pretty complex, and also what actual remedy individuals might have is a different question altogether. I think what is a good sign in terms of federal resolution is that we think it is likely that the Supreme Court is going to take a marriage case very soon. There have been 3 cases already argued before federal circuit courts of appeal, and there are going to be 2 more arguments before federal circuit courts of appeal by the end of September. And Justice Ginsburg has said recently that she expects the Supreme Court is going to take one of these marriage cases, certainly for the end of June 2016, if not an earlier decision. So I do think it is likely that the Supreme Court is going to resolve a lot of these questions for married couples sooner rather than later. And in the interim, couples really are encouraged to try and protect themselves as much as they can. And as unpleasant a thing as it may be to think about drawing up extra documents and adoption decrees for a family that should be respected because they are married already.
Now, in just 5 years, the percentage of adults who say they oppose same-sex marriage has fallen from the majority, 54%, to a minority. Today, roughly 4 in 10 Americans, 39%, say they oppose allowing gays and lesbian couples to wed. This is according to a Pew Research Center polling. Does the high court at all, Camila, take public opinion and this massive tide of change into consideration?
Well, I think so. I mean, even if not explicitly, the judges are human beings. They've been very aware of what's been going on in the courts around the country. There have been 30-some decisions since Windsor came down a little over a year ago, and every federal court to have considered a marriage ban since Windsor has struck it down as unconstitutional, and I think that's very compelling in and of itself. I also think that the court's going to be very aware of history, and one of the echoes that I can't help hearing as we're having this conversation is the story of Richard and Mildred Loving. And the Loving case was ultimately a case about a couple who lived in Virginia, but they left Virginia and they went and married in Washington, D.C., which allowed them to marry, and then returned home to Virginia, which had a law that prevented people of different races from marrying. and they were an interracial couple. So the case Loving versus Virginia from 1967, in which the United States Supreme Court struck down interracial marriage bans around the country, was ultimately a case about one state recognizing the marriage that had taken place in another state. And I think that a lot of what we're discussing today is a story that the court will be familiar with based on the history of the court's jurisprudence about recognizing other states' marriages and about constitutional guarantees of liberty and equality.
Mm-hmm. I read that Justice Ginsburg also predicted, perhaps in the same interview that you're referencing, that justices would not delay ruling as they did in that interracial marriage case in 1967. What does she mean by that, the delay?
Well, in the days of segregation, the court had a number of opportunities to decide whether an anti-miscegenation law was constitutional. And it could have issued a broad ruling a few years before Loving when it decided McLaughlin versus Florida. But the court hesitated. And again, it issued limited rulings that didn't go as far as saying that this kind of racism, this kind of distinction made about whether you can marry or cohabit or be in a relationship based on your race and the race of your partner, the court declined to rule broadly until 1967. And I think there's some shame in that, and I think her comments were encouraging in that they indicate a growing acknowledgement, even among members of the court, that the refusal to allow same-sex couples the freedom to marry is shameful, too. It's an indignity that's unwarranted, it's unfair, and it needs to be erased. It's a stain on our country.
Let's get some thoughts here as we have 2 or 3 minutes left here from each of you about the future. Sarah Vereen, the attitudes and legal landscape moving rapidly. What do you see in the future? What do you see in the future in Texas?
I agree that I think that there'll be eventually a Supreme Court decision that will basically make the laws universal that throughout the United States. I think that's the problem now is that you have to constantly consult the legal documents to figure out what your status is, depending on where you are at the present time. So I see that improving. And I think with that, the attitudes will change. I really do think that laws affect the way that we perceive each other. So I'm hopeful.
Mm-hmm. Ed Reggie in St. Louis, do you feel public opinion is changing in Missouri?
Absolutely. You know, we were the first state that back in 2004 passed that amendment. It was a new concept to do this during a primary election, and it worked. And I think the public is changing rapidly in Missouri. Maybe not to the point where we're quite there, but I do think it's the stories. I do think it's the couples that, you know, drive to Iowa or go across now to Illinois. I think it's those stories coming back to work, coming back to their families, coming back to their churches and synagogues, talking and having really those conversations. That's going to make the change.
Camilla Taylor, do you have your eye on a specific case that you think is likely to be the case before the Supreme Court in the next year or so?
It's so hard to know, but the first case, certainly, that will be up for the court's consideration is the Utah case, in which the Tenth Circuit agreed with a district court opinion that struck down Utah's marriage ban. Close on its heels, though, is the Fourth Circuit case involving Virginia's law. So that also may be before the court in the same conference, and the court will have the opportunity to consider them both. And then the additional cases that have been argued and may result in a decision that the court could consider are every state in the Sixth Circuit, and that was just argued last week. So all of those states like Ohio and Kentucky and Michigan and Tennessee, those marriage bans also may be up for the court's consideration as potential candidates for cert. Then the Seventh Circuit cases of Indiana and Wisconsin will be argued on the 26th of August. And in early September, you'll get Idaho and Nevada
okay.
in the Ninth Circuit.
Sounds like a whole host of cases. One of them will be the case, I guess. Camilla Taylor, thank you for giving us the legal perspective. Senior Staff Attorney and Marriage Project Director for Lambda Legal. Thank you, Camilla.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sarah Vereen, for joining us from Lubbock, Texas, from KTTZ in Lubbock. And thank you for that essay. We have it on our website for others to see at iowapublicradio.org. Ed Reggie, thank you very much. Organizer of the Marriage Equality Bus in St. Louis, thank you.
Thank you.
River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.